Good morning, everyone. House State Administration Committee will come to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Vice Chair Phelan?
Here.
Vice Chair Cordham?
Here.
Representative Baum?
Here.
Representative Bertolio?
Here.
Representative Brockman?
Here.
Representative Frazier?
Here.
Representative Green?
Here.
Representative Perry?
Here.
Representative Rexton?
Here.
Representative Running Wolf?
Here.
Representative F. Smith? Representative Sprunger?
Here.
Representative Staffman?
Here.
Representative Stromswald?
Here.
Representative Walsh?
Here.
Representative Weatherwax? Representative Yakowich?
Here.
Representative Benton?
Excused.
Chair Dooling?
Here.
That is all, Madam Chair.
A few announcements before we get started. Please silence your cell phones. If you must take a call, please step outside of the committee room. If you wish to give testimony, please be sure that you are signed in on at the sign-up sheets at the door, providing your name and affiliation. Please note that the information in the testimony is public record. The following bills have been scheduled for a hearing today: House Bill 148, 151, 103, 90, and 56. And yesterday we had a little a comment about how things were running in order, and Representative Stromswald brought up the fact that we need to make sure all of our items go through the chair, and she had a great analogy or example of how it's supposed to go. It's like passing a basketball or passing a football. You go through the chair, they pass it back through the chair, pass it out to the member, and so it's a great way to keep order and keep the committee running smoothly. So let's work on that today and just improve from there. Thank you. So we will now hear House Bill 148, sponsored by Representative Binkley.
Good morning, Chair Dooling and State Administration. It's very nice to stand before you today. I am Representative Michelle Binkley, and that's B-I-N-K-L-E-Y. And I am from House District 85, and that's in Hamilton in Ravalli County. I'm presenting House Bill 148 to you today, and it's the Information Technology Board bill. HB 148 amends the composition of the Information Technology Board to change the presiding officer from the director of the Department of Administration to the chief information officer, maintains the Department of Administration director as a permanent member, and allows for certain members to appoint a designee. The issue is the Information Technology Board should more accurately reflect the CIO's position and allow for certain members to appoint a designee. It amends Statute 215-1021. The proposed changes are to make the Chief Information Officer the presiding officer while maintaining as a permanent position the director of the Department of Administration. It allows for certain members to appoint a designee, CIO, DIO, OBPP, and the three agency heads. This update to the Information Technology Board is this Chief Information Officer's role. Certain members are authorized to appoint a designee where it would not infringe upon the appointment. And I would like to turn this over to the State Chief Administration Officer, Mr. Kelvin Gilbertson. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Proponents, please.
Good morning, Chair Dooling and committee members. Before I begin, I have a handout for the committee. May we have permission to hand that out?
Yes, please.
Hey, my name is Kevin Gilbertson. My last name is spelled G-I-L-B-E-R-T-S-O-N, and I'm the Chief Information Officer for the state of Montana, and I rise in support for HB 148. The Department of Administration is grateful to Representative Binkley for carrying this bill and appreciative of the work the legislative staff has done to prepare it for introduction. The Information Technology Board serves an important advisory board in the management of IT used by the state. The ITB has 18 members from state agencies, state elected officials, and representatives from the state legislature, judicial branch, and private sector. This bill amends Montana Code annotated 215.1021 and changes the presiding officer from the DOA director to the state CIO, myself, while maintaining the director as a permanent member of the board. Currently, the CIO and State Information Technology Division plans the board meeting, we draft the agenda, and we complete the minutes. This change just more accurately reflects the role of the CIO and SITSD in supporting the ITB. Also, at times it can be difficult to reach a quorum. This bill preserves the appointment process and allows for greater flexibility for the ITB by permitting additional board members to appoint a designee. In the last legislative session, the legislature added the design for some ITB members. We thought that it was a good idea that's carried forward into this bill. These members are the CIO, DOA director, director of office and budget and program planning, and the state agency directors. Again, thank you, Representative Binkley, for sponsoring this bill, and I respectfully request a do pass vote. I stand ready for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Giblichen. Next proponent.
Good morning, Mrs. Chair, members of the committee. I'm here to support this, which is legislation resulting from our red tape relief initiative, where I asked each agency to look, among other things, at the boards and their operations and where can we improve efficiencies.
Lieutenant Governor.
Excuse me.
Thank you very much.
I am Kristen Juras, J-U-R-A-S, Lieutenant Governor of the state of Montana, and I do support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Next proponent, please. Do we have any proponents online?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any opponents? Opponents in the room? Opponents online?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any informational witnesses? Informational witnesses. Online?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, questions from the committee. Representative Yakovic.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question that I have on what would be ITB, Information Technology Board, how many people are on the board, and just a little paragraph on that.
Okay, I think that question is probably directed to Mr. Gilbertson. Mr. Gilbertson.
Chair Dooling, Representative. Yes, there are 18 folks on the board. This is a board put together in statute. It's an advisory board, and it basically approves the state strategy, and, you know, we review the same types of metrics that we do with the Legislative Finance Committee as well, just in terms of IT purchase requests and things such as that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Gilbertson. Any other questions? Vice Chair Cordham.
Madam Chair, a question for Mr. Gilbertson, please. Gilbertson, on the language is a little bit unclear between different sections on the designee being appointed by either the department head or, I'm guessing, the DOA, for example. On line 21, it says, or their designees, which means those directors of the state agencies assign those designees, but on others it says a designee. Are those designees always appointed by those state agencies, or is there some wiggle room in there for someone else to appoint those?
Chair Dooling, Vice Chair Cordham, the intent is really to have the board member appoint the designee. Quite often with the agencies, the directors sometimes would appoint their CIO, who may have a more intimate knowledge of what's being discussed in the meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee? Any other questions? Seeing none, Representative, would you like to close on your bill?
Yes, thank you, Chair Dooling. Thank you so much, State Administration Committee, for listening to our this hearing on this bill. And I would ask a please to pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. This now closes the hearing on House Bill 148. Is Representative Hopkins here? Okay, great.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Apologies, we didn't have the TV on outside.
Oh, no worries. Let me open on the bill first, please. Thank you. We'll now hear House Bill 151.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Mike Hopkins, H-O-P-K-I-N-S, representative for House District 92 out of Missoula, bringing you here today House Bill 151. So one of the conversations we're going to be having during this session, all over this building, and I would imagine one of the conversations you're going to be having in this committee repeatedly is, how do we not just make the trains run on time as far as government goes, making sure that we stay on schedule, but how do we keep the train itself in good condition? We're going to do that through finding as many efficiencies as we can, finding places where we can streamline government procedures, get work done quicker, more efficiently, more effectively. One of the ways we're going to have to do that this session is dealing with inflation, right? Because we have procedures, say, for DOA, where we allow them to do small-scale construction without having to wait for us to come back into town, drop by the long-range planning committee to get approval for them. These are, you know, relatively small projects, about $100,000, not entirely cheap, but, you know, you're doing ADA compliance, you're renovating bathrooms, what have you, and we just don't make them wait to come to us to get that approval. Well, that project that would have cost $100,000 a few years ago is running them $170,000 now. So that thing that we wanted them to do to streamline their procedures, they're no longer capable of doing. So House Bill 151 makes adjustments all over the place for that. House Bill 151 tries to connect government to the way, you know, reality works on the ground. The fact of the matter is that if you were to go back 50 years ago, we used to utilize newspapers for media purposes, for communication purposes, a lot more than we do today. And the fact of the matter is, I'm a political nerd. I love newspapers, read them all the time. But the fact of the matter is that we communicate in very different ways than we did, 10 years ago, much less 20 or 30 years ago. So we got Russ here in the back for any questions that you might have. Got a lot of expertise here for you today. With that, I will turn it over to proponents, opponents. Look forward to the conversation and reserve to close.
Thank you, Representative. Proponents for the bill?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of SAVA. Good to be with you today. Many thanks to you and the sponsor for taking the time this morning to hear our proposal. As good Representative Hopkins mentioned, this is an efficiency measure. The aspects of the bill, I did have some handouts here.
Mr. Catherman, can you introduce yourself and spell your last name, please?
Yes, ma'am. My apologies, Chair Dooling. Russ Catherman, Architecture and Engineering Division Administrator for the Department of Admin. Last name is spelled K-A-T-H-E-R-M-A-N. Okay. I do have some handouts with your permission. What I have is a table that breaks down the bill by section and the proposed changes that we have here. So.
Thank you.
So as Representative Hopkins mentioned, we do want to propose to you today some of these efficiency measures that have been a long time coming. The last time the legislature was interested and willing to raise these limits was 1997, so they've been in place for quite a while. I don't want to take a lot of time because I know we have some other folks interested in speaking to the bill, but just to walk the committee briefly through the portions of the bill that are applicable here. You'll see in Section 1 a change to the consent of the legislature to perform construction activities. Right now, in the building program, everything greater than $150,000 comes before the legislature. We're asking that to be raised to $300,000. Section 2 does provide for supervision by the Department of Administration for construction activities, and we would propose raising that to the same level, $300,000. Further down in Section 2, on page 3 of the bill, we're asking for changes to some procurement limits. So there's a sole source limit, an informal bidding limit, and a formal bidding limit in Title 18. And we're asking for inflationary changes within those limits there on page 3 of the bill. The sole source limit currently is at $25,000. We're asking the legislature to consider raising that. The informal bidding limit right now is set at $75,000. We're requesting that be raised to $150,000. Anything over $150,000 would then be formally bid, and there are procedures in place for all those methods of procurement. Just to give you a sense of the inflation from 1997 to today, it's 100 on the CPI, it's running 187%. So a change from 75,000 to 150 is just a little bit over that 187% as well. So each of these limits is based upon CPI. One of the things that we've proposed here on page 3 in Section 2 is an inflationary adjustment language to those limits that would be based on CPI for every 5 years that would be established in rule. That way we can keep pace in procurement with the limit set in statute. Another thing that is not in statute currently is our ability to respond rapidly to emergencies or public exigencies, and we're asking for the legislature's concurrence to be able to negotiate contracts without competitively bid for emergency and exigency situations. Those currently exist within the Montana Procurement Act for goods and services, but they don't allow us to respond in terms of construction. We've had a number of seismic events, asbestos contaminations, pipelines freeze, break, all kinds of things have happened, and there's no ability in statute for us to respond rapidly to something that is over a sole source limit of currently $25,000. So it's problematic in us trying to respond quickly. There are definitions in statute for an emergency and exigency there already. Jumping down to Section 3, a little change there in the inflationary bidding climate. We've seen a lot of bids, of course, come in high. And the statute right now only allows us to negotiate deductions of 7% from the lowest bidder. We'd like to be able to negotiate up to 15% in reductions from the bid, try and keep projects moving and make them happen more quickly without rebidding. Section 4 of the bill, at the bottom of page 4, we're asking for the ability to do in-house design work, raise that $75,000 current limit up to $150,000. Again, it's an inflationary adjustment from 1997. In Section 5, we're asking it to, it actually shows up on page 6 as the change that we're requesting. Line 14 is to raise the bonding limit from $50,000 to $150,000. Over the last 25 years, there's been a disconnect in statute. That bonding limit for performance and payment bonds was set at $25,000. There was a local government change in a bill, I think roughly 15, 16 years ago, that changed the sole source procurement for local governments to $50,000, and the bonding limit changed at that time. Local government and school districts can now sole source anything up to $80,000, where state government is still limited to $25,000. And we're just asking for an alignment of that performance and payment bonds at $150,000. Section 6 would align a public notice requirement and advertising of public projects to be more more in line with the Montana Procurement Act, where advertising in newspapers is an option rather than mandatory. Right now, the state is required to advertise in two newspapers, one being the seat of government, so we always advertise every project in the Helen IR, and then one in the seat of government in the county where the project is located. That's a mandatory requirement. As I mentioned, we'd like the opportunity to, we still post everything publicly, but it's more efficient for us. We're not sure that a lot of our bidders and things really use the newspaper a lot to find public projects and public work. So we wanted to align that more closely with the Montana Procurement Act. That also would have an inflationary adjustment in Section 6, bottom of page 6, and then a couple of other minor cleanup items on page 8 of the bill, Section 7, the bid security. Right now, we're allowed to accept an irrevocable letter of credit for performance and payment bond, but not for a bid security, which seemed a little bit odd. So we're just asking for an alignment there between those bonding sources. A little bit farther down, page 8, line 16 of the bill would change that bid security requirement to match the formal bidding requirement of $150,000 that we're asking for. Section 8 is, again, just an alignment with the public notice provision, and Section 9 would be an effective date. So, Madam Chair, I know there are a lot of other folks that would like to speak to the bill, talk to some efficiencies. I really appreciate your time. Again, just quickly to mention, the last time these limits were adjusted was 25 years ago. My first year working for state government, I had actually had hair, darker at the time. And so to give you a sense of the times change and inflation, we would respectfully ask the legislature to consider some of these changes to help us be more efficient. So thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Catherman. Any other proponents for House Bill 151?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Shauna Lyons, LYONS, Director of Budget and Planning with the Office of the Commissioner of Higher Education. On behalf of the Montana University System, we are very much in support of House Bill 151. Both Representative Hopkins and Director Catherman laid out great points with escalation costs and inflation. Those are also hitting the university system. By increasing the limits for construction activities, it will keep the smooth flowing processes that were intended 25 years ago with the limits. So with that, Madam Chair, I will stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Lyons. Any other proponents?
Good morning, Madam Chair, Dueling, committee members. John Howe, Vice President of Facilities Management at Montana State University, H-O-W, no E. We are strong proponents of the proposed bill by Representative Hopkins, and as Director Catherman had stated, in particular, this last year in 2022, we had 154 contracts that would be improved through this efficiency change and inflation adjustment. 74 of those would actually qualify underneath the $25,000 limit. And so raising that to $50,000 would streamline our internal processes from an administrative standpoint, both with our maintenance standpoint across campus, including our sister campuses in Billings, Havre, and Great Falls. Additionally, as Director Catherine mentioned, the exigency and emergency issue, we were the unfortunate recipients of a frozen pipe here most recently. And working with A&E division, we were able to bring along a contractor. But having that exigency and emergency language identified in the bill would greatly streamline our ability to respond quicker to emergency situations on campus. I think lastly, as we also talked about in the bill, there's a provision there for internal design services. Right now, we're struggling to identify staff, but we are making headway in that. And as part of that process, we are fully staffing for an architecture and engineering positions. And raising that limit would actually allow us to respond better to internal, smaller obligations, as Representative Hopkins mentioned, right? Minor office remodels, ADA renovations, minor building things that we can handle on campus would greatly be streamlined by improving this bill. So, again, strong proponents of this. Like Shauna mentioned, I'll be available for questions from the committee as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Howe.
Morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Bardell Mangum, M-A-N-G-U-M. I'm the design and construction supervisor for Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. I'm here today on behalf of the director in support of House Bill 151. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Design and Construction oversees the construction of capital and major maintenance projects for all divisions and programs of FWP under delegated authority of the Department of Administration's Architecture and Engineering Division, Russ Catherman's team. Currently, existing statutory limits significantly hamper our ability to secure contractors appropriate to the size of the project. A number of smaller contractors who have been reliable partners in the past have ceased to pursue our projects due to onerous bonding requirements and formal bidding practices that would have previously been considered small projects. Bringing statutory limits into balance with increased design and construction costs would allow us to be more agile as we contract with appropriately sized contractors based on the complexity of each project. Our design and construction team consists of landscape architects, construction project managers, land use that with experience in land use planning, civil and construction engineering, land surveying, hydrology, and other disciplines. We have the internal capability to conduct topographic surveys and to design and oversee construction projects for a wide range of facilities and resources under FWP management. We also often retain the services of consultants based on specialized knowledge, skills, and abilities, design and construction workload, and the mentioned statutory requirements. This improved agility would allow us to continue to retention of consultant services while balancing the workload with less complex projects that can reasonably be completed through the expertise of FWP staff. Consultant fees generally fall between 15 and 30% of total project costs, limiting contracted consultant services to more complex and larger scale projects will mean more efficient and completion of less complex capital improvements and major maintenance projects, resulting in more work on the ground, preserving and protecting our resources. We appreciate your consideration of our efforts to bring these limits into balance with current design and construction costs and ask for your support of House Bill 151. I'm also prepared for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Mangum. Next.
Mrs. Chair, members of the committee, Kristen Juras, J-U-R-A-S, Lieutenant Governor. This is an efficiency study that the Governor Gianforte asked the Director of Administration in consultation with other state agencies to undertake. How can we procure more efficiently with more agility, yet maintain the appropriate balance of legislated oversight? As you heard, many of these increases are simply based on inflation, and we do request a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Lieutenant Governor.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jennifer James, J-A-M-E-S, here on behalf of the Architects of Montana, the Montana chapter of AIA, and we are happy to support House Bill 151 and answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mrs. James.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Steve Wade, W-A-D-E, here on behalf of the Montana Contractors Association. You know, for the reasons previously stated, we think this House Bill 151 kind of provides some necessary updates, modernizes some things, and brings some uniformity. And as a result, we'd urge your support.
Mr. Wade. Any other proponents? Proponents online?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Do we have any opponents to the bill? Any opponents in the room, online?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Informational witnesses. Informational witnesses in the room, online?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, questions from the committee? Representative Perry.
Madam Chairman, this would be for Mr. Kathavan.
Madam Chair, Representative Perry.
Mr. Kathavan, on page 3, where you talk about the inflation adjustment being calculated every 5 years, why is that not every year? Because it's easily done, you've got a good formula, and inflation can hit you pretty hard.
Madam Chair, Representative Perry, thank you for that question. It's a good thought. We tried to strike a balance between the effort put into rulemaking. It does require a lot of the public notice, the 90 days, the drafting, and so forth. So we struck on this concept of every 5 years simply just because of the effort that we go into the rulemaking. Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Steffman.
Thank you. Question. Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Mr. Kathavan, please.
Chair, Representative Steffman.
Thank you, Mr. Kathavan. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I want to first thank you for preparing this very helpful handout by going through all the sections. I do have just a question about one provision, and that's the emergency provision. My experience with state government is that sometimes an emergency is in the eyes of the beholder. And I'm wondering if you see a way by some kind of requirement to report immediately to the legislature or an interim committee or something like that, just so we can know what the emergency is and respond if perhaps we don't agree it's quite an emergency.
Madam Chair, Representative Steffman, that would be an interesting proposal for sure. At the back of the handout, we did provide the definitions that were in statute for you on what constituted an emergency, and I think your point is very well taken. I know with the public exigency, for instance, in procurement of goods and services, there has to be an approval by the Department of Administration if an agency wants to do that. That would be, you know, reporting back to the legislature, I would think would be certainly something that would be viable. We could do that. The sponsor, being the chair of long-range building, we do provide some reports and updates there as well. So there could be some opportunities for that.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Vice Chair Phelan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This would be for you, Mr. Kathavan. I just was curious if when inflation goes back down, will it be adjusted, or will everything stay the same?
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Phelan, great question. I appreciate that. The aspect of the inflationary adjustment, it would be rounded to that nearest thousand, so whichever direction it goes is exactly how we would do that rounding. Now, it wouldn't always just stay limited and go up. We would anticipate it going either direction.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Yakovich.
Madam Chair, just a question that caught my attention on bids. In local government, of course, you make bids out to the newspapers and things like that. And I guess my question is, I assume that they have an idea, they've done a study, it's clear, a clarity that when we are sending these bids out, rather than using the local newspapers, that they are targeting their people effectively. So just curious, that's a big move from advertising to public notice. So just a question for Mr.
I believe your question is for Mr. Kathavan. Thank you.
Chair, Representative Yakovich, thank you for that. We already do post projects within all the plans exchanges around the state. And I do believe they share them as well. So it's not just localized. If we have a project, say, in Missoula, every plan exchange around the state, I believe there are 8 of those. We also do the website component, and we do have projects where we reach out and try to, through our architects and engineers, make calls and encourage contractors to bid our project. So there are multiple avenues, yes, sir, that we go through already to try and gain competition. We do anticipate as well still continuing with some newspaper advertising, particularly in the counties that are less populated, trying to get local bidders there as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Sprunger.
Madam Chair, this would be for Mr. Catherman. You're getting your workout in today.
That's good. Get my steps in.
Oh, that's right.
Madam Chair.
We're here to help. Thank you. Can you speak to the limits that you have, right? If we were to provide a raised limit, how do you handle things like change orders when something potentially hits that ceiling and exceeds?
Madam Chair, Representative Sprunger, that's a great question. It has come up. We do collaborate a lot with our other agencies when those situations have occurred. In discussions previously over the years with our other procurement folks and how they may handle similar change orders on goods and services, it's a factor in time that it wouldn't make any sense to back up the contract, that we would simply go forward from that point with a change order and then memo to the file as to the circumstances that changed and what happened, and acknowledge in the project record that the procurement happened under this limit. We got into construction, found whatever it might be, additional asbestos or some circumstances behind a wall or in an attic or a roof sheathing that needed to be replaced and extended, and we would note that in the project record with that change order as to what happened.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Oh, Representative Baum.
Madam Chair, thank you. Follow-up question regarding Mr. Yakovich or Representative Yakovich's question.
Chair, Representative Baum.
You had mentioned that regarding the public notice and advertising, you were looking to make it an option versus a requirement. And in follow-up, just wondering if there's like a particularized go-to spot for the online that all entities would know to go to versus numerous other websites or what have you.
Madam Chair, Representative Bond, yes, just for a quick note of clarification, we value very highly and our responsibility to provide public notice. So it wasn't the public notice that's optional. It was simply the mandatory newspaper advertising that we are hoping to go with a different form of public notice. That being said, we do post everything on the architecture and engineering site. We know our other agency partners for those projects that we might delegate or their small size have been doing similar practices. One of the things that we are actively pursuing is, if everybody's familiar with the EMAC system, the state's procurement system, we do advertise currently all of our architecture and engineering services through that. We've been in discussion with our state procurement bureau folks on getting design and construction into that system, and then any contractor who signs up for notification will get automatically noticed as soon as we post a project. So the system itself would provide public notice to anyone who's interested, contractor, public, or legislator or anyone else who might want to be interested in what's going on in state government.
Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you. Any other questions? Oh, Representative Rexton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for Mr. Catherine again. Maybe you could summarize exactly what benefits for us you will see as a result of these changes, just kind of overall summary.
Madam Chair, Representative Rexton, yes, to try to wrap it in a tight bundle and put a bow on it, we spent a lot of staff time on projects of the 150,000 limit and even some smaller. A lot of them, when they get to that level, they take just as much time to go through all of the procurement steps or formal advertising and bonding and so forth. So our efficiencies here are definitely related to staff time. Some of it is the expense in the newspaper advertising. It's not a huge amount, but it being mandatory, it does, we do spend a little bit of money doing that. And We should see some efficiencies in that regard, but most of it is involved in staff time that can be doing multiple projects rather than the same level of effort on an ever increasing list of smaller and smaller projects that get over the limits that are in the statute now.
Will this decrease the amount of time that a project is completed?
Madam Chair, Representative Rexton, honestly, I think it's totally dependent upon the project itself. It would shorten our staff time in those procurement steps that are involved in the process, for sure. We would hope to see some efficiencies gained there. Hopefully, we can get more bids out quicker and get them on the street sooner. That's our goal.
Representative Sprunger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question potentially for Mr. Catherman, but it might also be for Mr. Howe regarding contractors.
Do you want to try it, Mr. Catherman, or do you want your? How about Representative ask your
question?
I'll
ask the question.
And then they can.
Can you tell I'm new?
Rock, paper, scissors.
Okay, right, exactly. So I know everyone's going to want this question. So one thing that I found really interesting in what you shared was the idea that as the inflation has caused the cost of projects to rise, the same project maybe that cost $50,000 is now costing, I'm just going to go ahead and say $65,000, $75,000, it's pushing it over the threshold. One thing that you spoke to is the idea that you now have contractors saying, this no longer makes financial sense for me to pursue due to bonding, insurance, the complexities of projects for small, maybe one, two, three-person shops. Can you speak to us about the requirements between below that threshold or kind of like what are those requirements look like for a contractor and what's killing them pursuing projects?
Madam Chair, Representative Sprunger, I'd love to provide a couple of comments, and then I'm sure Mr. Howe and other agency representatives would love to also answer that question. Briefly, at the A&E division, what we see is smaller and smaller projects, contractors just, it takes a lot of time when you're trying to chase down a lot of subcontractors to come in. See, even if it's a small restroom remodel for ADA purposes or some other, like a conference room or several offices need to be fixed. Finding a general contractor to do that and finding subcontractors, in this, especially in this climate, to come in and spend, you know, 2 or 3 hours here one day, come back, wait for another piece of the project to get done, then another half a day doing the next piece of the project while the subs tend to overlap each other. It's very expensive. It's a lot of labor, and we're just finding it's that we can't get the contractors to come do it on that basis. So it's easier for them to make money on different projects than our smaller ones. But I'd love to turn it over to Mr. Howe as well.
Yeah, I think Russ has a little bit more hair than I, so I let him go first. Chairman, Madam Chairman Dooling, Representative Sprunger. In addition to that, we're fortunate enough at the university system, right? We have approximately about 62% of the state building footage across the state. And we have our actually internal maintenance teams, so electricians, plumbers, carpenters, painters, plumbers, all those staff that go and take care of our facilities. And by raising these limits, right, in the unfortunate event that we can't contract with a contractor outside, our staff have the ability then to go make those improvements. I would say from the bonding and perspective of raising that, as Director Catherman said, our contractors are extremely busy, which is a good thing for the state, right? But if it doesn't make financial sense for them to do that, they're not going to bid on projects. Most recently, we've had three bids that we've gone out to bid with zero successful bids back. Either they didn't respond because they were too busy, or the dollar amount was not significant enough for them to be able to respond. And so by raising these limits, one, it allows us greater flexibility for our internal staff to do, but then also raising the bonding requirements also makes it easier and more efficient for the private sector to respond to bids for the state. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have one follow-on. It's slightly different.
Follow-up.
Thank you so much. This would be for Mr. Catherman. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Springer.
Thank you so much. So one thing, I just have a quick question about for when you're going to procure your informal bids, I'm assuming these are firms that are already shortlisted. One, is that correct? And two, how do they get shortlisted?
Madam Chair, Representative, it depends on the location for the project. We look for as much local contractors as we can. Our assumption is that it's more efficient for a local contractor to try to bid projects, say, in Glendive or Miles City. So we don't maintain a list. Whenever we have a project, a re-roof of a smaller informal nature like that, we're definitely trying to find those local contractors. So it does vary. We don't have a specified list that we go to.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Okay. Mr. Catherman, I do have a couple of questions for you. So based on knowledge of newspaper public postings, and I know like Bradwater County, I represent them, and they're having difficulties because they have papers, but they aren't the official public papers of record for the official postings. How will that work in counties like that? And how will we manage that? Will you work in conjunction? Because I know that there's laws or bills being presented this session to help alleviate their issues with that. How is that going to work?
Madam Chair, thank you for that question. It's, if I understand the issue within the local newspapers that are small, we've had similar issues where, for instance, in Boulder, the most formerly the Montana Developmental Center is now part of the Department of Justice. The advertising would have to be done in the county seat, and it's difficult to find. So what we've discussed, our chief legal counsel is here. Hopefully, maybe Dawn remembers this conversation. but what we did was said we were advertising in Helena. We're trying to get as local to that county as we can. There have been a couple instances out east where a local newspaper was not available, and we advertised in the nearest county seat that we could. So that was our workaround.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Any other questions? Seeing none. Mr. Representative Hopkins, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, so one, I believe it's probably pretty likely that we will see a bill here coming off the last legislative session. We had decided to take all of our budget subcommittees and have them run during the interim as well. I think we'll probably more than likely see a bill that makes that permanent. So when it comes to ways to check in on these agencies, when it comes to spending emergency funds or just anything that's covered by this bill, Section F will be around during the interim for exactly that. Additionally, most of all of these agencies have some kind of emergency funds. And so the example I always think of is we had a pipe burst at a school towards the end of the last legislative session, started flooding, good old human waste, all the bad stuff, right into the school. So we had a department that had an emergency fund of about $100,000 that was able to go in and replace that without them having to wait 2 years for us to come back in. And so we can do that same kind of thing. And additionally, this is my fourth term. I've asked Russ all kinds of stupid questions for all kinds of information over those years. He's never failed me once, so I imagine that'll still go on into the future. And then, obviously, I would anticipate that construction inflation stays around for a little bit. That seems reasonable to me, but obviously we need to be in a position to change as soon as that changes, and that's also kind of the idea with the bill. The entire point is us being able to be agile and react to things as they come up and happen. And then as far as just benefits goes, I mean, we're trying to find additional efficiencies, but we're also trying to keep what we got, right? And so from Section F's perspective, there are things that we want to see come in front of us. There are things that we want to be in a position to approve before anybody does anything with anything. But there are things that we expect government to just get done before we get here. We do only have limited time. It's 90 days. Our subcommittee work is just, a month, basically. But
small amount of money to deal with anyways. So there are things that we expect them to be able to get done. The current situation that we find ourselves in, you had Russ talking about the last time that this was all changed. You may have heard me in the past say that I don't think just because something hasn't been changed for a while, that means it has to be changed. The point here isn't the amount of time. The point here is the difference between that snapshot in time and the current situation that we are dealing with. So, I mean, the number one efficiency would be these folks still doing what we expect them to do and being able to do it in the current reality that we're looking at, where, you know, a project is running 170% of original projected cost or what have you. So that's a pretty good get as it is. And then, yes, I probably should have thrown in the beginning the public notice portion, but it's not about not doing that in any way. It's about how do we do that effectively. Right. And I think this bill covers that pretty good. So with that, I would obviously thank the administration. This is just one part of a whole bunch of stuff that we'll be seeing here this session. And hopefully by the end of it, we slap them all together and, you know, you find a couple hundred good efficiencies and you'll have yourself a more streamlined, better government at the end of the day, which I think is what we are looking for. So with that, I would thank the committee for its time. I would ask for due pass. And it was nice to stop by state administration.
Thank you, Representative Hopkins. This now closes the hearing on House Bill 151. Representative Brockman had to run downstairs for another hearing, so we are going to hear House Bill 90 with Representative Frazier.
All right.
Get between me and my coffee.
Gosh, he's tough, isn't he?
Oh, I guess I almost did anyway, didn't I? All right. There we are.
I didn't butcher it.
I appreciate that. It's permanently famous for my nomination and being called Joyce.
Fair enough, fair enough.
We will now hear House Bill 90, sponsored by Representative Frazier.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the SAVA Committee, which, by the way, is one of the best committees out here, so go team. My name is Representative Greg Frazier out of House District 78, that's F-R-A-Z-E-R, and I bring before you House Bill 90 from the Department of Administration, exempting certain state employee group insurance plan contracts from the Montana Procurement Act. House Bill 90, which amends the Montana Procurement Act, creates a new exemption that would allow the state direct contact with Montana hospitals or other Montana health care facilities. This exception would provide the state employee group benefits plan the ability to negotiate, create, and maintain their own contracts versus having to rely on contracts negotiated and held by its third-party administrators, such as Blue Cross Blue Shield of Montana. I'd like to point out that I had a conversation with Mr. Dorn from BCBS, and this bill is not in any way a result of the state's contract with BCBS and doesn't affect the proposed savings expected because of that new contract. So with that, I'll also point out that fairly simple bill. If you look on page 2, line 23, it just adds one line to that. Contract under Title II, Chapter 18, Part 8 with the healthcare facility is defined in 50-5-101. So with that, I will refer any questions to Director Misty Giles. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Proponents.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Misty Giles, G-I-L-E-S, Director of Administration. First and foremost, I want to thank Representative Frazier for carrying this bill for us this session. As indicated briefly in his remarks, this does create a new exemption under the Montana Procurement Act. This is similar to things you see with the healthcare facility, transportation, things like that, so you don't have to do the full-blown nine-month long bureaucratic RFP process where it makes sense, and would allow the state employee benefit plan to directly contract with any healthcare facility in the state if we so choose and bypass that public process. I would make sure to clarify, as stated, this is not a result of our new TPA contract with Blue Cross. This is one of our more red tape relief type efforts in scanning through efficiencies. The state is kind of at risk because we do not have the ability to direct contract. So if a facility did want to offer services, something happened with one of our TPA providers, we are just flat-footed. There's nothing we can do there. So this is just changing that. We have no intention of creating our own contracts with facilities at this time. It's just a cleanup measure. So I'm here to answer any questions y'all might have.
Thank you, Director. Proponent.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the community committee. My name is John Doran, D-O-R-A-N. I'm the Vice President of External Affairs at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Montana. We're the state's largest and longest-standing not-for-profit health insurer, and we cover approximately 350,000 Montanans. It's nice to be in front of this committee. I don't often get the chance to testify in front of you, so it's a nice welcome start to the legislative session. As the state's new third-party administrator, we rise in support for this bill for two main reasons, and I'd like to thank the department, the Healthcare Benefits Division, and Representative Frazier for bringing it. The first is that it provides the state a safety net. Blue Cross has the strongest possible network. We have 100% of all of the hospital facilities in our network, and we have 98% of all of the professional providers in our network as well. During the response to the RFP process, we had 12 of the state's largest hospitals submit letters of support for Blue Cross. And so we have a long-standing tradition of working very, very well with the hospitals across the state. I'm also more than confident that our local network contracting team has the ability to contract with the hospitals and to meet and exceed the savings targets for the state. So I don't really foresee a day when this would necessarily be necessary because of our ability. However, it's nice to provide that safety net. We have seen historically, even in Montana, where certain out-of-state emergency room doctors groups refuse to contract with any insurer, let alone Blue Cross or others. So this would provide a safety net in that instance as well. Across the United States, especially in larger markets, we've seen instances where in a radius of, say, 25 miles, there are five or six hospital systems. Some of those hospital systems refuse to contract with hospital or with payers across the nation because there's the competition that can drive down prices. Again, if that were to happen in Montana sometime in the future, this bill would provide the safety net for the state to contract directly with those providers. The second reason that we support this bill is it really puts the state on an even playing field with other large employers who already have the ability to contract directly with providers. So for those two reasons, we urge a due pass. And again, we thank the Department, Healthcare Benefits Division, and Representative Frazier. And I stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Dorn. Any other proponents? Any other proponents online?
No, Madam Chair.
Any opponents in the room? Any opponents online?
No, Madam Chair.
Informational witnesses. Informational witnesses online?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Questions from the committee? Oh, Vice Chair Cordham.
Madam Chair, for Director Giles, please.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Cordham.
Madam Chair, Director Giles, what necessitates this change to the pay plan, and how is it different from, I guess, past administrations?
So this is just a change in how we can contract, because under current law, so take, for example, if a St. Pete's came in and said they refused to contract with Blue Cross Blue Shield, I have no ability, without going through a full request for proposal process, where I could get multiple hospitals, multiple vendors to come in, which is not what I'm after. I'm seeking to only contract with one hospital to provide services here in Helena. I have no legal way to do that right now. So this does provide that safety net for the state, where if we needed to direct contract with a single provider, single facility, things like that, we can move and do that, which under current law we cannot.
Follow up. Madam Chair, Director Giles, what specific part of the current procurement laws are hampering the efficiency here?
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Cordham, again, it's going through the request for proposal process. So under current law, we fall under the Montana Procurement Act, which means for us to contract with any type of facility, we would have to draft a full scope that would range anywhere from 5, 10, 30, 50 pages. We would have to put that bid out on the street. Anywhere from 30 to 60 days, and then we'll have to put together an RFP committee and review those, score, have multiple facilities when you're only after one, because again, we're not looking to really exercise this authority. This is a safety net, and then score and hope the facility that you're looking to contract with wins the bid when you may only be after one. So that's how the current procurement process works. This would simply allow, in the event that safety net is needed and we have a provider or a facility that will not work with either Blue Cross or another TPA that may come down the road, we can quickly go to that provider and say, okay, will you work with the state? Can we work with you on a contract term? What would that look like? So it would still fall under our plan. Employees would be covered. It just gives us that negotiating ability to go straight to that provider and say, okay, why will you not work with our TPA? Okay. Well, will you direct contract with us without going through that process? Does that answer the question?
Thank you, Director. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? Representative Sprunger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is from Ms. Giles.
Madam Chair, Representative Sprunger.
What's to prevent price gouging? If I say I don't want to participate with Blue Cross Blue Shield and I'm St. Pete's, what's to prevent that?
Madam Chair, Representative Sprunger, that's a great question. So right now the state follows a reference-based pricing model. So we've modified that. You've probably seen that in the papers a little bit over the last few months, where all providers that come in and work with the state of Montana, they have to meet our multiplier for different services. So a knee surgery may differ from prenatal, but there is a cap on what the state will pay for all services across the state.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Any other questions? Seeing none. Did you have one? Okay. Seeing none, Representative, would you like to close on your bill?
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair and State Administration Committee. Super simple bill, just a safety net for the state of Montana. So with that, I would respectfully request a do pass, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. This now closes the hearing on House Bill 90. Give me a few minutes here. I'm going to go ahead and present my bill next, and then we will wait for Representative Brockman to come back from his hearing.
Anybody have a joke?
Joke about time travel? I told you, but you didn't like it.
Okay, we'll now hear Representative Dooling's bill on House Bill 56.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the State Administration Committee. My name is Representative Julie Dooling. That's spelled D-O-O-L-I-N-G. And I represent House District 70, which is three precincts in the eastern portion of Lewis and Clark County and all of Broadwater County. The bill I have today before you is at the request of the Department of Administration. It's an act extending the application of the Bond Validating Act, removing the set-aside percentage of the state's volume cap and allowing more flexibility within the state law, updating terminology pertaining to annual comprehensive financial reports. So section one of this, the Bond Validation Act, this section amends the Bond Validation Act to retroactively approve state or local bond issues that may have had authorization shortcomings or procedural errors due to the effective date of the act. As has been done every general session since 1947, this bill would update the effective date of the bond validation provision to this bill's effective date to cover bond issues since April 8, 2021, when the last update was enacted. Sections 2 through 7 are the general provisions of the bill. To update the Unified Volume Cap Bond Allocation Plan Act, to update terminology and eliminate set-asides for specific programs, to give the Department Administration more flexibility in allocating to state issuers. In addition, this bill would incorporate modern government accounting terminology by replacing the term Comprehensive Annual Financial Report with the term Annual Comprehensive Financial Report, now used by the federal government and other government entities. The background on this is Section 1 Bond Council provided insight that the because this is retroactive, Bond Validation Acts are curative acts in the sense that they cure authorization shortcomings or procedural errors that would occur in a state or local government bond issue. And then Sections 2 through 7, the Unified Volume Cap, proposed change to the Montana Unified Volume Cap Bond Allocation would modernize the act by eliminating the set-asides in the allocation to state issuers and allowing more flexibility in the allocation of resources. Again, this is one of the measures brought forth into the Red Tape Initiative to streamline, modernize, and just make doing business in the state of Montana just a bit easier and less complicated. And with that, I will have proponents speak to you about the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Do we have any proponents?
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. Sorry, I've got a loud voice, so pardon me. good morning. My name is Kristen Reynolds, R-E-Y-N-O-L-D-S, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Administration. My team is responsible for doing the accounting for certain general obligation debt and bonds, and we also fulfill the requirements for financial disclosures related to those bonds, and we ensure the information is posted on the Municipal Securities Rulemaking Board's website, otherwise known as the MSRB. We also help administer the Volume Cap Bond Allocation Act. So I'm here this morning in support of House Bill 56, which is being proposed in part, as Chair Dooling mentioned, as part of the Governor's Red Tape Relief Initiative. I would also like to thank Representative Dooling for carrying our bill on behalf of the Department of Administration. As she mentioned, the first change presented is related to the Bond Validation Act, Section 17.5205. The validation process is actually listed in 203, but we're not proposing any change there. I'm just bringing the bill to you to renew the date since last legislative session. The bond validation acts are common nationwide, and they are meant as a way to protect investors from the chance that an error might challenge the validity or enforceability of a state or local government bond issue. Another notable change mentioned proposed is related to the Unified Volume Cap Bond Allocation Act, Section 7.5.1312 through 1316. Volume cap is an annual capacity, of which each state has to issue private, tax-exempt bonds. It's federally authorized, and the maximum amount is stipulated under IRS tax code. The proposed change would eliminate the fixed percentages that we currently have stipulated in state law and allow more flexibility in allocating the volume cap to issuers. The added flexibility will allow us to make determinations that better align with demands and what's happening in the market. The last area of change in the proposal is related to the term comprehensive annual financial report. In 2021, the Governmental Accounting Standards Board, otherwise known as GASB, they are a nationwide body that sets governmental accounting standards for governments. They changed the terminology for one of the primary governmental financial reports. So the term comprehensive annual financial report is now called the annual comprehensive financial report, or ACFR. Little tongue-tied there. This was an industry-wide change, and our bill updates the statute to conform to the new terminology. I would like to mention that we did submit a document to the committee. It was a letter of support from our bond counsel, Dorsey and Whitney, out of Missoula. Hopefully everybody got that letter. I do have a hard copy if I need to distribute that around. Yeah. Thank you. So hopefully you'll have a chance to look at that letter in support of the bill. And I ask that you consider the information presented in support of House Bill 56, and I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Any other proponents? Any proponents online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Any opponents? Any opponents online?
No, Mr. Chair.
What about informational witnesses? Any informational witnesses? Online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Oh, we do have one. Sorry. Go ahead.
Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cheryl Cohen, C-O-H-E-N. I'm the executive director of the Montana Board of Housing. We conduct business as Montana Housing. We've been one of the primary issues under the volume bond cap and are here to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Representative Green.
Thank you, Chairman. My question is for Ms. Reynolds. Ms. Reynolds, we've heard a lot of these red tape relief bills come in so far, and I'm just kind of curious, has the department went through and calculated, is this a time saving, is it an FTE issue that it's going to free up personnel to do other things? I'm just kind of wondering what the red tape relief, other than maybe cleaning up the books, is doing.
Chair, Representative Green, this is really just to allow more flexibility. I know in the recent past we have had to go and receive governor's approval to actually reallocate some of those state issuer percentages that are currently stipulated in law. So again, it's just allowing us more flexibility for us to review and approve the applications for state issuers without having to rigidly follow what's in the law currently, as those designated allocations currently are presented in law.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. Seeing no other questions, Representative, do you want to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Again, this is just one measure that the current governor and the lieutenant governor have taken in order to make more efficiencies within our state governments and allowing our state employees to do the business that they need to do better and faster. And with that, I request to do pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. This now closes the hearing on House Bill 56. State Administration will take a recess for about 10 minutes. Potty break.
State House Administration will come back to order, please. We will now hear House Bill 103 by Representative Brockman.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I am Tony Brockman. That is spelled B-R-O-C-K-M-A-N. I represent House District 9, the northern part of Kalispell, and the community of Evergreen. Today, I bring forward House Bill 103, Elimination of the Board of County Printing. This is a Department of Administration request and is a part of Governor Gianforte's Red Tape Relief Initiative. House Bill 103 eliminates the Board of County Printing and reassigns its responsibilities to the Department of Administration. Those responsibilities are to set the maximum price and printing standards a newspaper can charge a county for printing legal advertisements. The bill eliminates the expense of maintaining a board that has not met for 5+ years and preserves the right of public notice and participation through the Montana Administrative Procedures Act, MAPA. It's already in place and provides specific notice to stakeholders like MACO and the Montana Newspaper Association. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll sit down and let the Department of Administration and Lieutenant Governor Juris provide more specifics.
Thank you, Representative. We'll now hear from proponents.
Good morning again, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Lieutenant Governor Kristen Juras, J-U-R-A-S. The Governor's office is here to support this bill. As the representative stated, it is part of our Red Tape Relief initiative, and I just want to give you a brief overview. We have more than 160 boards, committees, councils created by statute. In addition, we have close to 70 councils that are created either by executive order or by the departments. So as part of Red Tape Relief, I had asked every agency under the governor's jurisdiction to take a look at the boards, commissions, councils attached to them to see if their purpose still existed, and also to consider if they were running a program that would be more efficiently managed or run by the departments themselves. And there are approximately 10 bills coming forward this session proposing to eliminate various boards and a few bills to consolidate some boards into a single board. So that was the overview I wanted you to give. And the reason is that our boards are primarily staffed by volunteer members. The governor makes over 3,000 appointments to this board, which requires almost one full-time person within our staff. Then each agency is required to provide the support to these boards, to provide an executive officer, to provide them space, and to do all of the training of these volunteer board members and prepare the agendas, make sure the public notice is set out, all that comes along with supporting these. And we believe, after analysis, that this is one program that would be administered more efficiently and at less cost to our taxpayers by the department itself. And I'll let them provide you a few more details about what the board does. Thank you.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Next proponent.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Misty Giles, G-I-L-E-S, Director of Administration. First, I want to thank Representative Brockman for carrying this bill for us this session. I know he briefly made a few remarks, but wanted to give a more of a high-level overview. This bill will give the department the authority to set the prices that may be charged for county legal advertising and printing versus going through a board process. This board has not met since 2018. It's been around since the 60s, and the rates have only changed 7 times in that 50-year period, so it's pretty infrequent. Instead, we would handle this through the MAPA process, through a public rulemaking. Those rules have to be reviewed every 2 years by law under MAPA. So we would work through that, and then we would work with our county counterparts and give them 30 days after publication a schedule of the prices so they have that all free of charge. And if there are further modifications that we would need to make, you know, to any sort types of printing costs, anything like that, again, we would just go through that normal process. As the Lieutenant Governor mentioned, this is a red tape efficiency we identified due to the infrequency they meet, the infrequency of the rate changes. It is cumbersome on all departments to manage a board and staff those and get that geared up, and we think we can handle this more efficiently and working with our county counterparts through a more rulemaking type process when the rates do need to be changed, given the infrequency. So with that, thank you.
Thank you, Director. Any other proponents?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Eric Bryson. That's B-R-Y-S-O-N. I'm here on behalf of the Montana Association of Counties. Madam Chair, committee members, I was first supposed to start by telling you how much I love the Department of Administration, and I will do that. But secondly, I want to talk about the merits of this bill. The board, as it has existed since the 60s, I think has been well-functioning. It's done its job, and it's provided a service for both public input and controlling costs of what is required legal noticing for counties. But I do agree and do support this bill in that I think it might be more efficient for this to transfer over to Department of Administration, and we trust and will participate in that MAPA process to make sure that there's not abnormally large price escalations when this process is completed. I think if this doesn't work, we'll get a chance to revisit this in subsequent years. And if we need to go back to something that looks like the value of the neutrality of a third party evaluating legal notices and posting, we can always move back to that. But I do encourage you to support this bill. Give Department of Administration a chance to move us into the next century and have a much more updated process for setting legal notice fees. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bryson. Any other proponents? Any proponents online?
No, Madam Chair.
Any opponents to the bill?
Good morning, committee members. My name is Jim Strauss, S-T-R-A-U-S-S. Recently retired after a 28-year career as publisher and editor of the Great Falls Tribune and then the Missoulian. I continue to be active with the Montana Newspaper Association. I'm here today on behalf of David McCumber, who is on the board of printing. David had a community obligation and couldn't meet this hearing, so he asked me to read his testimony, which I will do now. The state government should not be directly involved in setting prices or price guidelines for private enterprise. This surely goes against the conservative principles of limited government and government staying out of private business. Montana public notices are a fundamental part of the public's right to know, and to have the state government involved directly in pricing those notices is a clear conflict of interest and is tantamount to government price fixing. The Montana Constitution clearly stresses the importance of transparency in government, and dissolving the standalone board of printing would be in direct conflict with that principle. The infrequency of board of printing meetings should not be construed as a lack of need for the board. The Montana Newspaper Association and its members discuss public notice rates annually. MNA members also understand the tight budgets that local governments operate under and therefore have in recent years opted not to submit a request to the board for an increase in rates. Neither newspapers themselves nor the board should be penalized for keeping public notice rates reasonable. Dissolution of the board would do just that. This is part of a laudable overall effort to reduce red tape and streamline government, but in this instance, the effort is misguided. The board is a source of efficiency, not red tape. Actions of the board guarantee a maximum rate for legal notices across the state, meaning each county is treated equally and agencies don't encounter inconsistent rates. The Board of Printing provides the ideal venue for newspaper representatives and local Montana government representatives to convene as needed to ensure public notices inform the public and meet the letter of the law and are provided at a reasonable cost to Montana government agencies, businesses, and citizens. To put the government in charge of pricing in any industry is anathema to many of you, and to do so in this case would needlessly complicate a system that has worked well for many years. Thank you for your time. I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Strauss. Mr. Strauss,
yes.
The letter that you have read, is that available to be?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. That will be submitted to our clerk and be part of our documentation for the bill. Do we have any other opponents in the room? Opponents online?
No, Madam Chair.
Informational witnesses? Informational witnesses online?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right, questions from the committee. Representative Steffen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for the Lieutenant Governor, please.
Madam Chair, Representative Steffen.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. I'd like to know how you respond to the comments of Mr. Strauss, and however you see fit.
Well, the Board of County Printing is an agency of state government. It is a unit of state government that sets fees. So it itself is setting fees as a unit of the state of Montana under the supervision of Governor Gianforte, or the sitting governor. So it is, in fact, the state setting fees. It's comprised of two county commissioners, two newspaper representatives, and one public member. In addition, the state sets fees in numerous different settings, fees that it charges to citizens, fees that courts charge for filing fees. So it's not uncommon at all for the state to set fees. Most importantly, this still will go through the rulemaking process where the newspaper association, counties will have the opportunity to present comments as fees are adjusted in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just want to be sure I understand. So what you're saying is we already set these fees, and this bill only transfers that authority from one place to another, but the state will still be setting fees in the end. Is that, am I understanding that right?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Steffen, I concur with that assessment because the Board of County Printing is a state agency comprised of people appointed by the governor.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you. Any other questions for the committee? Representative Walsh.
Madam Chair, a question for Mr. Strauss.
Yes.
Madam Chair, Mr. Strauss, so currently when they set the prices, is that across the board for every county publication, statewide publication, everybody's the same regardless of what their structure or overhead might be?
Yes, it is a set rate. You know, it's done by what's called the folio, which is a little more than an inch, and it specifies, you know, and the board specifies type size, how many words per inch, and then what the rate is for that folio. So basically, it's equivalent to a column inch rate, and then that is set for all newspapers of record. And newspapers are free to publish below that rate, but they cannot publish above that rate.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Perry.
Madam Chairman, I think this would be for Mr. Strauss as well.
Mr. Strauss?
Yes. Or maybe for Ms. Giles, I don't know. Is there anything that requires the newspapers have to publish if they don't agree with this cap?
Newspapers, they apply with the county to be the paper of record, and by so doing, they agree to abide by these rates. Yes.
Follow-up?
Follow-up.
So if they don't apply, then they just say we're not accepting these rates and we're not publishing any of the notices.
No, that's never happened. I mean, there's strong advantages of being the newspaper record. I was publisher of the Ravalli Republic, which is obviously in Ravalli County. The Bitterroot Star is also in there. Both of us would compete for the contract. You know, in Cascade County, you have the Great Falls Tribune and the Cascade Courier. In many counties, you have multiple papers, and they compete to be the county of record. In some counties, you only have, you know, one newspaper, particularly in rural areas.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Steffen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question for Mr. Strauss, please.
Strauss.
Madam Chair, Mr. Strauss.
Yes.
So I know you heard the Lieutenant Governor say the state is already setting rates, and this is just going to change who in the state gets to set the rates. And I want to know if that change
apparently you oppose state-setting rates altogether. Does that change impact you in some way adversely?
Well, the board as it's set up has representatives from government and representatives from newspapers. So, in the newspaper case, private industry representatives. And, and the board itself is, self-operating. And I believe being independent of the Department of Administration is in keeping with, the Montana Constitution and the importance of transparency. We, with the Montana Newspaper Association, what concerns us most is being a direct part of the Department of Administration. We consider that a conflict. We think the setup now is far preferable to that.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Okay, I have a few. Mr. Bryson.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Bryson, so I think we're going to hear a lot of bills about publication, public notice, et cetera. How is MACO going to participate in this to ensure equality or that the rates aren't, how are they going to protect the counties and still allow for public notification as per state statute?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's a great question. And there are a number of bills that are going to go through that deal with or tweak or try and modernize the publication requirements. But let's back up for a bit and talk about both the legal notice and the requirements the counties have when they engage in the public's business to give the public adequate notice and reasonable opportunity to participate. That's what this comes down to. As legislators adopt laws and state statute codifies what's required for the public to receive notice, i.e. legal publications, I think that's why the state has some impetus to not control the prices, but set a reasonable rate that all counties need to pay when they're required to do those public notices. That process doesn't change whether it stays with this board or it moves over to Department of Administration. And in the MAPA process, the public, interested parties like counties, interested parties like the Newspaper Association will have a very specific and deliberative way to add input to the process to determine what these rates are going to be. It keeps with the consistency that we currently have under the board, which I think is ultimately important. We can't, as captives, counties are required to follow state law. We are required to publish and put legal notices in the newspaper of record. If we're not subject to some limitations on the cost, the property taxpayers in each county are going to be subject to the whims of the newspaper in their community that has that designation as the newspaper of record, and thus will be required to pay whatever they tell us to pay. So the price discussion is really important, both in terms of equity across the state and fairness in that we're spending taxpayer money. The larger answer to your question is I think we need to modernize what is publication and notice, how we provide meaningful opportunity for the public to participate. You do it, and you did it as a result of an international pandemic to allow for Zoom. We've not modernized the posting requirements. You represent Broadwater County. Broadwater County currently doesn't have a newspaper of record. Your county commissioners of Broadwater County are required to spend their money, your Broadwater County taxpayer money, putting legal notices and publication notices in the Helena Independent Record, of which serves, I think, less than 3% of Broadwater County residents. It is a problem, and it is an issue that we need to address, and this only gets to the point of keeping that equity across the board and modernizing the rate structure. The next half that the legislature needs to deal with through, I think, a variety of bills this session is going to be how do we modernize and get our constituents the notice that they need to actively and meaningfully participate in the government that they elect us to represent. So I can't answer that with this bill, but I think the answer is coming.
Thank you, Mr. Bryson. Now I have a question for Director Giles.
Madam Chair.
Director Giles, both you and Mr. Bryson have referred to MAPA. Could you tell us what the definition of that is, please, so we can understand that fully?
Definition? Madam Chair, is the rulemaking authority that all agencies have to follow, where we have to do public notice and comment. And I know we've heard a lot of commentary today about, this being in a board moving to the department and that engagement. I would argue that the MAPA process is probably more transparent and provides more insight from anybody in the state to be able to participate. I mean, those are longer requirements, usually 14, 30, 60 days that rules are out. There's stakeholder engagements, webinars, things like that when most agencies do any sort of rulemaking. So that would would be the process that we would follow and look at that every 2 years. As I said, the rates have only changed 7 times in 50 years, so I don't foresee this being something that we will frequently need to change. But if we do, we would go through that normal transparent process and get not only the county's newspapers, but everyone's engagement on any sort of rate change that we would put forth for the state.
Thank you. And I do have one more question, and I'm not sure who can answer it, so everybody gets to point fingers and pick. So if this board has only met fairly infrequently, formed in 1960, last time it met was 2018, how has it been able to keep up with, I know Mr. Straw said that they kept the rates low for publication, but I know as a private individual or a candidate, my rates are all over the page when it comes to publishing in the newspaper, so it doesn't really seem, I appreciate that it's kept it low for the counties for the public notice portion, but has it really kept up with the rate of inflation as to actual cost for the for individuals or the counties who are publishing their notices?
So the So the rates haven't changed since 2018. So the rates have held steady, you know, to your point. And the Montana Newspaper Association, we do review them every year. And like I say, you know, the consensus of recent years has been that because of tight government funding, we didn't see any reason to raise the rate of public notices. You know, public notices are an interesting part of a newspaper in that, yes, they are. They are an advertisement. They are an ad source. They do contribute to the public's right to know. But part of a newspaper's function is that watchdog function. So that's why public notices are so important, you know, to be presented by a paper. And Mr. Bryson, you know, he brought up, I thought, a very good point, and that is, you know, how are we keeping up with changes, you know, in technology, changes with informing the public? Because, you know, for instance, you know, at daily papers, you'll see almost as many digital subscribers as you will print subscribers. In rural counties, it skews much the other way. It's very heavy. You know, the rural counties tend to have their very high print readership almost solely, whereas the larger communities, you will see a divide. So what does that mean to us with public notices? So, for instance, when I was publisher of the Missoulian and the Ravalli Republic and the Great Falls Tribune, when you publish a public notice in any of those publications, it appears in the print edition, it appears in the electronic e-edition, it appears online in the website, and then the Montana Newspaper Association also, about 15 years ago, was one of the first associations in the country to put together a statewide site called MontanaPublicNotices.com. So all public notices published in Montana Newspaper Association newspapers are on the statewide website, which is great when you're looking at something like asphalt bids. You know, it's an easy way for contractors across the state, you know, to search, and it's a well-designed site, very searchable. So that information gets out not only in the print edition, but all those electronic and the statewide site that I just talked about. So I just want to say that Mr. Bryson made a very good point. We do need to continue to adjust to make sure we're delivering the information the way our readers want. And that's what we do with public notices. That's what newspapers do every day. That's why we're available in so many formats.
Thank you, Mr. Strauss. Mr. Harris, can you introduce yourself since you did not introduce yourself as an informational witness?
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Don Harris. I am the Chief Legal Counsel for Department of Administration. Been in state government for about 18 years now. And I want just to address your question. I believe that as a state agency, we are required to review all administrative rules every 2 years. That's a requirement in statute. So the way that I think we can ensure that rates get set more frequently, or at least looked at more frequently, is we are required by law to look at it every 2 years. When we're doing that review, if it looks like there's been major change in inflation like there has been in the last couple of years, we would call the stakeholders, newspaper association, counties, get everyone in a room, talk about do we need to make some adjustments in the rates if folks agreed that that was a good idea, or I suppose even if one of the two groups agreed that was a good idea, we might publish a rulemaking in under MAPA, and then everyone would have a seat at the table to come in and talk about what the rate should be, and we would base our adjustment on the public comment that we receive. I would just like to make a note that the board met in December because Department of Administration called a meeting of the board. We had five people attend, I think, or actually it may have been four. It was the board members. There was no one from the public. No association was present. And it was kind of a struggle to get it going because we hadn't been, you know, meeting regularly. So I think this is a process that we could clean up and make a little more efficient for folks. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Representative Perry.
I think this might be for, I guess, Director Giles.
Director Giles.
Madam Chair, Representative Perry.
My question is if we haven't changed the rates since 2018, and these are businesses, does that mean that the rest of our constituents are being charged more to cover the costs that haven't been rising in public notice?
I'm not sure that we would know that, Madam Chair, Representative Perry. I would maybe defer to the association. Yeah.
Let's refer to Mr. Strauss. Mr. Strauss?
Yes, just one quick addition. The Montana Newspaper Association was represented. David McCumber is part of the MNA. And David is on the board. And so just wanted to clarify that one point. You know, I would say that when you look at a newspaper's revenue base, I mean, there's a lot of different components, and each one is looked at differently. You know, as a longtime publisher, at no time did I say, for not raising public notice rates, you know, where are we going to get this revenue, you know, elsewhere? We look at cost per thousand for our print and our digital distribution, and like I say, all those conversations have always been outside of public notices. When we talk about public notices, we're willing to go with a much lower per column inch rate because, again, of that watchdog function. We view this as really important information for our readers. You know, we realize that it's an atypical type of advertising in that it's informing our readers in a very credible manner about local issues and state issues of importance to them. So that's why we're willing to go with lower rates. Does that answer the question?
Sort of. Thank you.
Anything?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Thank you. Representative Staffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Ms. Giles, please.
Madam Chair, Representative Staffman.
Thank you, Ms. Giles. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm thinking about your comment that the newspaper's ability to participate in MAPA is, in your view, even superior to the current structure under the board. But as I understand it, under the current structure, the newspapers are actually voting members of this board. And whereas under MAPA, they get to come in as a witness like you do today, but ultimately the department decides. So it seems to me, contrary to what you said, but I'm wanting to understand better, that there is a significant disadvantage from going from a voting member to a witness whose testimony is considered and can be accepted or rejected. Can you explain why it would be that you think that the MAPA route protects their rights even more?
Madam Chair, Representative Staffman, absolutely. From my perspective, I think it provides more protection to the industry because that is one voice on that board. As you heard from Mr. Harris, we had no participation from the public. That was kind of a difficult meeting to get off the jump, where the MAPA process, it is very public notice. There's larger windows, so versus a two-hour day and a meeting that we may or may not call, someone may or may not be able to attend. There's a 30-day window usually that people can provide comment. There's stakeholder meetings. There's outreach throughout that entire process. So we will be able to talk to any of the newspapers, any of the industry, all of the counties, if they had feedback or comment or concerns with anything we were doing versus a very narrow board meeting window with one single representative there that day.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Follow-up.
Thank you. With the department being the decider as opposed to the board, and newspapers obviously cover state government as part of their work, do you see a conflict of interests?
Madam Chair, Representative Staffman, that's a great question. No, I do not. As mentioned by the Lieutenant Governor, it is really common across state government where all state entities regulate fees for either the citizen, courts, different type of entities. That's common across a whole thread of the entire state government. So I don't think that's a conflict of interest at all. And all of that does go through usually a public MAPA process.
Thank you, Ms. Giles. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right. Representative, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for the great questions. I'll close by saying that House Bill 103 is the signature example of the Governor Gianforte's red tape relief initiative. To Lieutenant Governor Juris's point, this board is already a part of state government. Boards are costly in terms of time, money, and other state resources. The Department of Administration can exercise this function with more efficiency and eliminate outdated bureaucracy, cut red tape for all Montanans through currently established processes while ensuring transparency. I'd just simply ask you to consider your taxpayers, and I urge you a do pass. Or urge a do pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. This now closes the hearing on House Bill 103. Okay, as soon as the room is cleared, we're going to do a little housekeeping. Oh my God. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor, for attending today. We appreciate it.
Madam Chair, I just had a question in general.
Can we wait till the door's closed?
We'll be talking a lot about the red tape initiative, and I thought it was really excellent what the Lieutenant Governor just said. She said to me what I'm trying to figure out for a while, 160 committees, 70 councils, 3,000 appointments. I'm just wondering if we could request like a one-page document, and maybe there is one already out there, not a huge document, but one page, because that will be our kind of our guide as we move along here with a lot of these bills, as well as we were talking earlier, talking about how do we promote what we're doing here to our constituents. This is really good stuff to let our constituents know what we're doing here. So I would just love to have some kind of one pager, not a lot, but what she said was great as a document. Does that make sense?
It does. It does, Representative. And what I would suggest, because this doesn't affect just our state admin committee, it affects multiple committees throughout the session. And so let's try to get one of our staffers to get that for that information for us and have it ready for anybody who wants to see it. Okay.
Madam Chair, do you want me to do that, or are you going?
You sure can. You can talk to one of our caucus.
We're talking about these two.
No,
here.
No, I'm talking about one of our caucus staffers.
Caucus staffers. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
And we'll chat about that after committee.
I will, along with anybody else who wants to remind them. But okay. Thank you. I will do that.
That would be great. Thank you. I think it'd be a good piece of information. That way, we can kind of see how far-reaching that this project or in the initiative is. Okay, so yesterday we heard three bills. I'm waiting for fiscal notes still on House Bill 81 with Representative Mitchell. I'll follow up with him today. I'd like to do executive action on that tomorrow. I'd like to do executive action on House Bill 103. And I will take input from anybody who, on the bills that we heard today, that you think we can go ahead and pass forward on executive action tomorrow, because we're hearing three bills tomorrow, and they shouldn't be too extensive, I don't think, at this point. But so House Bill 106 for Representative Walsh, and how about for today, Representative Binkley? That was House Bill 148. House Bill 151 looks like it's going to have some discussion outside of our chambers, maybe amendments or something. So we'll pass on that one for now. I think we need to process House Bill 103 for a bit, because that had a lot of stuff going on with it as well. House Bill 90 for Frazier. Do you think we're ready for that one too? Okay, we'll do that. And then House Bill 56 that I presented. I know. So let's do those four for sure tomorrow, and possibly House Bill 81 if the fiscal note is done and we don't have any issues with that. Does that work for you, Vice Chair?
Madam Chair, can you clarify the four, please?
Sure. House Bill 106, House Bill 148, 90, 56, and possibly 81. The vice chairs will contact you regarding caucusing if need be, if anybody's interested in doing that. That will be outside of your time tomorrow. You do that on your own time, either today or tomorrow. And again, we will meet at 8 a.m. tomorrow. Anybody have any other questions? How was the passing of the ball? Was it better, Representative Strommel?
It was a little better. There's some other things. Maybe I'll make a flow chart and send it in Teams.
Flow chart, go back and... So her reference to passing of the ball was from Representative Usher's Judicial Committee. Representative Usher runs a very, very tight ship. And if you want to learn about how committee orders probably supposed to be, he's a good example. So we have no other questions. State admin. Oh, we do need to discuss the joint meeting we were going to have with the Senate State Admin Committee, but it's kind of a...
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think yesterday we'd mentioned that there was going to be a joint meeting today with the Senate State Admin Committee. However, that has been canceled. We lost in the room roulette. So we're regrouping and figuring out if we're going to reschedule for next week or just invite folks to our one of our meetings next week. So we'll keep you all posted. But in the meantime, your calendar is free at 1 o'clock today, or after session, after floor.
Yep. So, and yeah, we'll just keep you posted when we get those details nailed down. Because it is important for the agency directors and department heads to come in and chat with us and let us know what they do. And that way we also grow our contact network, because it's important to be able to reach out to those people outside of a committee meeting and get more information on a bill or just any issue in general that may come before you in the normal course of business throughout your two-year term. All right, and with that...
Madam Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
Madam Chair, I have a question about the green sheets.
The green sheets.
So will we have a little instruction, go over in green sheets, especially when we start looking at pensions?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Representative Bertolio, yes, I do. I have copies of the green sheets and the pension report from this interim to pass out to you all, so I can bring those tomorrow. And if you would like me to just go through those tomorrow, I'd be happy to do so.
Okay, so we will do that first, go through the green sheets, and for the freshmen, the green sheets are basically the fiscal financial report of the pensions, how the pension systems operate, and it's all, how many pension systems we have?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we have 11 statewide systems, 9 defined benefit, 2 defined contribution.
It's under our purview in this committee anytime they want to make any changes to that system. So it's really important that we understand it and at least have a basic ground floor knowledge of what it's about and what we're looking at. So we'll go over that tomorrow morning. Then we'll hear the bills. Representative Sprunger and Representative Bertolio both have bills tomorrow. All right. Any other questions? Okay. House State Admin is hereby adjourned.